Good afternoon. It's wonderful to be here in this session. And I have presented a couple of more times in the sessions at APHA conferences. So it's great to be back and to tell the story of the work that I and my organization do in India. And it's good to present after Dr. Johnson's Nepal's story. So the story is pretty similar in India in comparison to what is there in Nepal. I'm also very pleased to be back in New Orleans. The last time I left New Orleans was very unorganized. It was on August 28, 2005, on the night when Katrina hit the city. And I used to be a scholar at Tulane, a medical center, and I used to live there for a time. So that was the time when I left New Orleans, and now I'm back here after 9 years with wonderful memories. That year, the conference was planned to be in the city, 2005, and then it was shifted to Philadelphia. So it's good to be back in APHA, finally in New Orleans in 2014. I forgot to put the slide of disclosures, and I have nothing to disclose, so apologize for that mistake. I'm going to speak to you in the next 15 to 20 minutes about the eye care status in India, giving a kind of a brief national picture, but then going to the reality of the area of India where I work and the kind of work that we do. India's story is a unique story in the context of eye care, because India has this extreme contrast on one hand of having world-class eye care available, extremely good capacities to reach out to the communities and provide eye care, and then on the other hand to have the highest numbers of people suffering with eye diseases and blindness. In many respects of healthcare, medical care, India has this extreme, you know, contrast of capacity versus need. But eye care is really something which stands out in India's case. So I hope to speak a little bit about the eye care scenario in India. The part of India where I work, which is known as the Thar Desert. Some of you may know, some of you may not know. What Gravis does, the organization, what we do in eye care, what has been some of our achievement, and what have we learned from our work. So India, as I told you, has a unique eye care scenario, one of the best eye care models function in India. Dr. Johnson was talking about Arvind Eye Care System, which is approximately 400,000 cataract surgeries in a year is what they do, so extremely competent. And apart from Arvind Eye Care System, there are many other organizations which are working. The organization that I lead is very small, but is definitely contributing to the work that is being done in India. And at the same time, India has the worst possible statistics of eye diseases in the world. It accounts for about 24% of global blindness. Vast majority of that is due to preventable cataract. India in 1976 started one of the first national programs covering the whole nation, focusing on controlling blindness, called National Program for Controlling Blindness. The program exists, but it functions very poorly because of the government issues and the networking with other organizations. Approximately 15 million to 17 million people are blind in the country. The chances of blindness over the age group of 50 raises very rapidly, mainly contributed to cataract, which is extremely prevalent, and also due to the fact that the screening services are not available in many parts of the country, and therefore people cannot get their cataracts screened and diagnosed and treated at an early stage, leading to blindness. Cataract accounts to 70 to 80% of the national blindness. India's case is also a unique case for another reason, because India is a very diverse country, and those prevalence rates, those issues of screening and services and treatment facilities vary from area to area. There are many parts of the country which are very remote, which are very impoverished, and which are completely deprived of eye care services. And I and my organization work in one of those areas. Vitamin A deficiency, we account for about half of the problem in the world in terms of children as a nation. Blindness prevalence rates vary from less than 1 to 2% in different states, and the three states that have the highest blindness prevalence rates are Rajasthan, where this desert is, MP, which means Madhya Pradesh, and J&K, which is Jammu and Kashmir in the northern part of the country. So we have a Vision 2020 unit nationally, which is the WHO initiative, which is working a partnership of many, many organizations. The most remote unit of the National Program for Control for Blindness is the District Level Blindness Control Committees, which would be compared to counties in the US. So we have the districts, the government bodies. NGOs, of course, have a very strong involvement in the program. And then the maldistribution of resources and the rural challenges. Majority of our ophthalmic services are restricted to not only to urban areas, but to certain parts of the country. And then there are world-class standards too. High numbers, very good qualitative surgeries, mainly cataract surgeries. So one of the studies to understand the national status, which was conducted in 2007 by Sightsavers, have these findings that 65% of the surgeries done in the country are done by the private sector or the voluntary sectors, NGOs, private hospitals. There are some 11,000 ophthalmologists in the country, but only 11,000 mid-level professionals. And ideally, there is a need of having 4 to 5 mid-level professionals to match up with the services of an ophthalmologist. 50% of the ophthalmologists in the country are not operating surgeons. And then the ratios in the rural India and urban India. In urban India, it's 1 to 25,000, whereas in rural India, it goes 10 times higher. And then 70% is the coverage of services as a result of a survey in 14 districts of the country. Coming to this particular area, the Thar Desert in the northwest of the country, this is the map of the state, not the map of the country, but it's one of the most underdeveloped parts of the country. Very arid, very dry, very hot because of droughts. We have extremely deficient rains in a year, which lead to strong problems, water and food insecurities, and also major health issues. 26 million people live here, out of which 2 million are people who are elderly, which is 60 plus, and therefore, the need of eye care services. The area doesn't have any big eye hospitals. Whatever eye facilities are there are very small. The one that we run is one of the best in that area. Small, but one of the best. This is not prevention, but prevalence. I'm sorry for the typing error. So more than 2% is the blindness prevalence rate in this area. Significant problems of malnutrition, other diseases, and very low health awareness as well as on eye care. The organization, very briefly, it's working in that area, in that desert part of the country, for overall community development. We cover approximately 1,200 villages with our work and a population of 1.2 million people. We focus on water and food security as well as on health care and drought mitigation. And within the work that we do on healthcare, eye care is an important part of our work. We partner with organizations like Sightsavers International, which is one of the leading global eye care organizations, but also WHO and HelpAge International, which works on aging. And I will skip a few things to be in time. And one of our important activities is that we form community-based groups or community-based organizations. And we work with 2,800 of such organizations, out of which there are 100 village eye care committees. So what is it that we do specifically in eye care? We work with these village eye care committees that help us in organizing screening camps, educational activities, and we want to have that strong community involvement in our work so that, you know, we can go back with technical expertise, but we can get the adequate support from the local people, local communities. We do outreach screening interventions, which are done on a weekly frequency. So once in a week, our team would go out to a village and we would screen for eye patients, particularly for cataract. Then we partner with Government of India's District Blindness Control Committee, which provides us funding support for cataract surgeries. Education on eye care, capacity building interventions to add up with community-based rehabilitation interventions for people who are living with low vision. Vision Center is an important unit of our work, and we currently run 6 of them, which is just a few. Hopefully we will be able to scale it up and have more vision centers in our working area. But they are located in remote villages, and they are run by these mid-level professionals or ophthalmic assistants. And ophthalmologists sometimes come to these centers to provide technical assistance to these ophthalmic assistants. What do? They screen people, they provide minor treatment which is required on site, and they refer these patients to our hospital as well as to other nearby surgical facilities if there is a cataract or other surgical condition. These centers also provide education on eye care, hygiene and nutrition, and they cater to about 40 to 60 people in a day. So what do? We do about 2,000 to 2,500 surgeries in a year. Optical services through optometrists, health workers trainings, and also some IEC materials. Wonderful to see all the wonderful work that you are doing, and something to learn from that. And then a school eye health program, and networking with other organizations, larger organizations working on eye care, such as Arvind and Sankara, and also other smaller organizations. So we try to go with an integrated approach, all the different components that I talked to you about. We try to make a holistic kind of a program. And then, of course, there are 3 different dimensions of our program. There is a medical program, which is screening and surgeries, but the strong focus on education going into the communities, education on prevention, and then advocacy based on research going to the government, to other organizations, so that there can be more support, mainly for cataract surgeries. The communities are directly involved, and so far our program has been good in terms of quality, and we work very hard to make sure that the surgeries that we do are of good standard. So in terms of some of our achievements, we have so far done close to 24,000 surgeries. About 90% of them have been cataract surgeries. About 15,000 people are screened by us every year, and we have so far trained more than 500 health workers who can go in the communities, talk to people, facilitate outreach screening services. And overall, the surgeries, the training, the capacity building, the education, all of this we have been able to take to about 500,000 people living in this particular part of India. Strong village eye care committees, very good partnerships. The awareness levels have been raised in the communities in comparison to, let's say, 10 years ago, and therefore the eye health-seeking behaviors have improved in the communities. Finally, what have we learned? Cataract surgery happens to be the most prominent issue within the field of eye care in India and many countries. It's a very low-cost surgery, costing approximately $25 to $30. So there is a need of having more resources available for those surgeries, and with education of the communities, this surgery needs to be scaled up. Community involvement is important, without which it's very difficult to do screening and other interventions. Remotest areas, remotest populations are the areas where more work needs to be done. Southern India is doing very well with all the bigger organizations, but other parts of India do not have those organizations, you know. And then local training and capacity building to have that mid-level professional support available within the communities. There are a lot of things for which ophthalmologists are not required. Vision centers are extremely important, and in our experience they have been very helpful for us to expand our work. And we obviously would like to exchange our knowledge, learn from other organizations. There is a lot that needs to be conveyed from organizations to organizations. And then qualitative services are important to be in a remote area and to be with the communities. It's important to deliver the surgical outcomes in a very effective way. And for that, networking with other organizations who have more expertise, who have more, ophthalmologists are important, and we don't have that many. So the knowledge, the skills are important, and therefore networking and advocacy is important. So this is probably it. We have a web page. Please log on to it at some point of time and see your work. Thank you very much for your attention.
An issue, and I think that's a good idea, and I missed Mort's initial question to you, but the question I had is, you mentioned that this app was good for identifying moderate to severe visual field loss. And you mentioned it using as a screening tool in your exam room. You know, the beauty of the FTD is using it as a screening tool for our glaucoma suspects. I'm an optometrist, so I'm practicing clinically. At the stage that app is now, I couldn't really use it as a screening tool for a risk for glaucoma. Do you think that in time you could develop or tweak that app to detect early?
Yes. We were able to do that with frequency doubling, FDT, and we found that initially, it's always a, you know, I've told this company baby steps. Don't try to do everything all at once. And one way of making it very efficient would be, in the testing, to use a forecasting strategy, similar to CETA, but a Bayesian strategy. Well, with that, you really need information that you've collected, so we'll have to get some centers together and do that. And then analyzing the data, the same sort of thing. There's, with CETA, there's post-processing, because certain things shouldn't occur, like having one point that's really low and all the other points around it are normal. So you can do some screening for that, and I think it will be possible. You know, we worked very hard at that with frequency doubling, and we found we had it with the original version, we had to add a couple of points out on the far nasal field because we were missing early nasal steps. but I think that's going to take a while. It's going to take several iterations. That's my goal, is to get that. The problem right now is it will detect early deficits, but it also finds deficits in normals because of that high false positive. Not a real high false positive rate, but we have to get that false positive rate down to make it useful, because you don't want to be getting a lot of false positives. So it's work in progress, I'll put it that way.
Final questions?
I'm just going to do a follow up to that, just that I think this is interesting as we kind of see this as the wave into the future, but I think technologies like this could be also used for self monitoring and reporting back to the doctors digitally, of course. So it'll just be interesting to watch that.
There are some people that are doing automatic diagnosis of it too, using support vector machines or other elaborate mathematical models or statistical models. And I'm not completely sold on that, but I think that can handle 85 to 90% of things that are clear. There's always going to be a gray zone. But I think if you had a good telemedicine system, I've run visual field reading centers for more than 20 years. To get information, you could have expert readers provide that information back, and I think that would be something that you would probably appreciate as well, to have that. So I think this is something that's evolving, but the world is becoming flat. You know? It's not quite there yet, but you know, I'm very pleased to hear about what's going on in India, and I'm also fairly new to this. So I haven't known about half the children have vitamin A deficiency. That's incredible. And I was thinking of a time when there was vitamin B deficiency in a particular area of the world that had a lot of avocados, which are very high in vitamin B, but they wouldn't feed it to their children even though they were getting vitamin B deficient, because that was pig food. Concepts are always difficult, because I thought, here you have the solution to this, but you're not doing it because you regard this as food only for the pigs, so you're going to have vitamin B deficiency. I think that a lot of, you know, I'm becoming more and more aware of some of the difficulties in different parts of the world. And South America has this, the Mideast has this, other places have this, but you know, this is something with cost containment, and you only have so much time to see your patient. It's going to be something we have to deal with here, too.
Thank you to all our speakers. It's a great session.